Jeffrey Ann Summers, Michelle Bartoli King, Sebastian Mark Norton, Appalachian Council.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Wait just a minute till we get your video feed. All right, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Paul Walkinshaw here on behalf of the defendant, Dr. Peter Rucci, and his practice group, and I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Right.
This case is about whether Wright v. Kay's statement that informed consent discussions are neither relevant nor material to issues of standard of care in the medical malpractice case applies here. It does not, for legal and factual reasons, both of which distinguish this case from Wright v. Kay. How is this case different? It's different in a number of ways from Wright v. Kay. This case involved an allegation that it was negligent for Dr. Fiorucci to do the procedure in the first place. Wright v. Kay did not. Wright v. Kay involved an allegation of intraoperative negligence. This case involved an allegation of preoperative negligence. Number two, plaintiff opened the door to the informed consent discussions by testifying selectively about his preoperative discussions with Dr. Fiorucci. That did not happen in Wright v. Kay. The plaintiff did not discuss the conversations that she had with the doctor in Wright v. Kay. Number three, plaintiff's expert in this case testified about the preoperative discussions, and he insinuated that he was not aware that they had occurred, and he refused to agree that plaintiff had the option to proceed with the surgery. That also did not happen in Wright v. Kay. And number four, plaintiff's expert, Dr. Smigalski, said that this patient was different from Mr. Chin because his patient was informed of the risk for nerve injury, and for that reason, comparing his patient, who also experienced nerve injury very similar to Mr. Chin, would be like comparing apples and oranges. Those are four reasons why, the main reasons why this case is significantly different from Wright v. Kay, and why Wright v. Kay's extremely broad statement that informed consent discussions are neither relevant nor material should not apply here. And Wright itself is pretty clear that if informed consent is made an issue otherwise in the case, even if it's not in the pleadings, and it was not in the pleadings here, but it was made an issue otherwise for the four reasons that I outlined. Wright v. Kay is clear that its statement would not apply in a situation like that. And we have a situation here where the informed consent discussions were made an issue otherwise. It's also pretty clear
Yes. What we did say in Wright, though, is that the patient's awareness of risks is not a defense to whether a doctor deviated from the standard of care. Do you agree with that?
I agree that the court said that, yes.
Okay.
I believe
you thought we didn't mean it, though, right?
Well, I wonder if the court might want to take another look at that. I do think that it's an extremely broad statement, and I can conceive of situations where that might not be the case, or why this court might not want to allow that to be the case, especially where the allegation of negligence involves the decision to do the procedure, which, as I stated in my briefs, is far different than the situation where it's alleged that the procedure was done negligently itself.
But isn't
the decision, go ahead.
Isn't the allegation here that the doctors looking at these x-rays and telling them that the procedure was even necessary was negligent. Wasn't that their allegation?
That was one of their allegations, yes, indeed.
So why does that differ from the statement that Justice McClanahan just read from Wright? It was negligent to even suggest that the procedure should be done in the first place.
Because it reaches into the preoperative discussions and the decision to do the procedure, which was not involved in Wright. What was involved in Wright was doing the was how the procedure itself was performed. So that's the reason that it's different. In this case,
counsel, let me press in on that a bit, because it seems that you may be making a distinction without a difference from the perspective of our jurisprudence. Wright, it seems to me, stands for the principle that you can't have, in essence, an assumption of the risk defense that says that if I tell you that there's the possibility of an adverse outcome, that if there indeed is an adverse outcome, you can't come into court even if the standard of care was breached. That seems to be the import of the holding in Wright. Would you agree with that?
I think I would agree with that.
Okay. In Wright, the standard of care was breached during the procedure. In this case, the allegation is that the standard of care was breached by recommending and beginning the procedure.
That's correct.
Okay, so from the perspective of what this court was trying to accomplish in Wright, that seems like a distinction without a difference. The Wright jurisprudence would seem to be broad enough to cover these facts. Where am I wrong in making that statement?
Well, I fundamentally disagree that it's not a significant distinction. I think it's an incredibly significant distinction because the decision to do the procedure in almost all circumstances, unless you have an incapacitated patient, it is a joint decision between the physician and the patient,
but
as
it
was in this case.
But doesn't the patient, though, rely upon the expertise of the doctor? If the doctor says, you know, this is an option, then the patient is like, okay, well, if that's an option, then clearly it must be something that is going to result in the outcome that I want.
Not in all cases, Your Honor, and I think that that's why it's important to be extremely, this court should be careful in making broad statements like that, because I don't think it's appropriate to say that in 100% of the cases that the patient relies absolutely on the doctor's advice. I think it is a joint decision in many cases, as it was in this one. And when the informed consent discussions in a case like this, it's alleged that it was negligent to do so, are kept away from the jury, you are keeping out a significant factual portion of what happened between the physician and the patient. And I don't think that should be lost on this court. And it happened here.
Well, let me ask this, counsel. How does that help the jury decide whether the doctor was negligent in giving his advice or not? How does this colloquy between the two of them about the risk have anything to do about with whether he was negligent or not in giving the advice to have the surgery?
Well, because one of the reasons that he decided to go ahead with the procedure, he being Dr. Peterucci, was that the plaintiff agreed to it after being fully informed of the risk.
Does that absolve him of his negligence?
It doesn't necessarily absolve him of his negligence per se, but I think presents a jury issue. It is one of the reasons why he decided to go forward with the procedure. There are other reasons.
Well, explain that to me. How does it help the jury decide whether he was negligent or not and whether his negligence was the proximate cause of the injury?
Because it was one of the... Because he must demonstrate that his decision to go forward with the procedure was reasonable. And I don't know how he can demonstrate that his decision was reasonable without being able to explain the reasons why he did the procedure. One of the reasons is that he had a full and frank discussion with this plaintiff, not once but twice, in preoperative discussions that was kept from the jury, and that the plaintiff decided to go forward with the procedure after being fully informed. That is one of the reasons.
But how does that absolve him from his negligence of not looking at the x-rays or not looking at them correctly?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose I disagree with your premise. I don't necessarily agree that it absolves him as a matter of law from his negligence.
Okay, that's perhaps a bad word, but how does it help the jury measure whether he's negligent or not? It doesn't. That's what we said in Wright. That's why we kept it out in Wright. We said this doesn't help the jury make their decision about negligence, proximate cause, at all.
Well, I disagree for the reasons I stated, and that is that one of the reasons that he decided to go forward with the procedure is that the plaintiff elected to go forward with it after being advised of the risks.
But I thought the initial allegations, or probably the allegation, was that he misdiagnosed the problem. And based upon his misdiagnosis, he recommended a particular procedure. Is that wrong?
Well, that is the way that the plaintiff frames it.
Those are allegations, right?
I don't believe that misdiagnosis was necessarily the allegation at trial, but certainly plaintiff's experts indicated time and again, both Dr. Smigalski and Dr. Folletti, that it was wrong for him to go ahead and do the procedure. I'm not sure that they necessarily elucidated why, just saying it was not necessary. I'm not sure that there was necessarily a misdiagnosis. For sure that might have been an issue, but I don't think that it really has any bearing here for a number of reasons, not the least of which is, and I've spent very little time on it, but not the least of which is that plaintiff himself and plaintiff's experts opened the door to the informed consent discussions, and if there is any reason for these discussions to have come in, that should be the reason. Wright versus Kay itself leaves the door open to those discussions coming in if they are made an issue otherwise, as they were in this case. Mr. Chin got up and testified that in response to a question from the trial court, did you meet with Dr. Fiorucci on May 6th before the procedure? He says no. That's not true. He did meet with Dr. Fiorucci, and he had a significant discussion with him, and he signed an informed consent document. By virtue of the fact that Mr. Chin said no in response to that question, Dr. Fiorucci should have been allowed to respond.
And he was allowed to respond. Didn't they talk about x-rays that he was shown by the doctor before the incident?
He was allowed a limited response, but it was not a full and robust response.
And let me just get to what the point is, because my understanding of Wright is the informed consent form is allowed in if it's relevant. That's the whole question, relevant, whether it's relevant. And that's what you need to explain, is why you think that was relevant. Not whether or not it has any bearing on an issue, but it's whether or not it's relevant to the issue.
Well, I believe it became relevant because of plaintiff's testimony and the testimony of his expert. Plaintiff's expert, Dr. Smigalski, admitted, yes, I had a patient very similar to Mr. Chin, because we did a molar extraction, and he had nerve injury. But my patient was different from Dr. Fiorucci's patient, from Mr. Chin, because my patient was fully informed of that risk.
Right, because the tooth was on the nerve in that instance, as opposed to your case when it was not.
Well,
that was his testimony, and that was based upon the cross-examination that was done on an expert. That's how it came out, right?
That was not on cross-examination. That was brought out on redirect examination. By plaintiff's counsel.
In response to your question on cross, didn't you have a patient who was similarly situated? Not exactly those words, but that was the question on cross.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I would explain it why he was not.
And we stopped there out of respect for the trial court's ruling that informed consent discussion should not. It was plaintiff's counsel's option and her strategic decision to go ahead and afford Dr. Smigalski the opportunity on redirect to expound on that. And did he ever expound? He went on for two pages about why his patient was different from Mr. Chin. And one of those reasons that he was different was that his patient was fully informed of the risk for nerve injury.
But he didn't say anything about there being a form that was signed or anything, did he?
No, that's true. He didn't say anything about the form, but the form is evidence that directly rebuts Dr. Smigalski's contention that his patient was different because he wasn't fully informed. What we wanted to be able to do was show a form in addition to ask the plaintiff and ask Dr. Fiorucci about the discussions, and the form says in black and white that actually, yes, unlike what Dr. Smigalski said, Mr. Chin is exactly like Dr. Smigalski's patient. So plaintiff's expert's attempt to distinguish his patient from ours should fail. We were prevented from being able to do that. We were not, we were allowed to be able to say that Dr. Fiorucci made some markings on the pantograph and that Mr. Chin had the option to proceed, but we were not allowed to directly rebut Dr. Smigalski's insinuation that that his patient was different. We were not allowed to do that. My time is almost expired. If I could reserve the remainder for a while.
All right.
May it please the court. I'm Jeff Summers, and I represent Stephen Chin as he resists this appeal of a jury trial from the City of Alexandria Circuit Court. With me at counsel table is Michelle Bartoli-Kane, Mr. Chin's trial counsel. This case is about the standard of care in diagnosing a dental procedure and the standard of care while performing that procedure. She never alleged a lack of consent. Consent was never the issue in the complaint. That's at A1 through 8. There's no allegation of a consent problem. There are two medical issues that put this square on with right against cat. Medical diagnosis is still medical treatment. Oral surgery is still medical treatment. The issue is, and the issue that the trial court decided, was the standard of care in rendering the diagnosis and the standard of care in actually performing the procedure. Knowledge of risk is not the same thing as granting permission for injury. You've heard a great deal about Dr. Smigalski's testimony, and it's worthwhile to explore the details. He was triggered by a question on cross, and Ms. Kane brought out those details on redirect. Dr. Smigalski's one patient out of 8 to 10 that he said had a nerve issue presented with an infection. There was an active infection, Appendix 712. Chin didn't present with any infections, Appendix 328, 338, 618, and 643. They're factually distinct. Fiorucci failed to communicate to Mr. Chin about the injury and what the immediate remedies could have been, Appendix 41 and 50. Smigalski testified about his procedure on his patient at A712. I sectioned the tooth out, removed it. Didn't have any acute bleeds, did not believe we had damaged the nerve with any instrumentation, but he had a degree of numbness afterwards. It persisted for about a year. He didn't seem too upset about it because it was partial numbness. I lost track of him. He went into the situation knowing that was the outcome. There's no testimony about causation. The man presented with an infection. In Smigalski's case, maybe it's the infection that produced the numbness, maybe. We don't know. That never comes out. Smigalski didn't say, contrary to the reply brief at page 6, that he injured his patient. He said he didn't fully recover. That's different from the testimony on A684 about Fiorucci's procedure. Very different from doing surgery, cutting down in there, having acute arterial bleed, and then having the patient come back with absolute total numbness of the mental and mandibular nerves. That's a very different situation. That doesn't open the door. That door stayed closed, firmly closed. Going back to the consent and negligence issue, in the reply brief at 6, Fiorucci actually argued that he wasn't negligent because Chin was aware of the potential for it. He's asking you to ratify the idea that divulging the possibility of risks insulates you when you cause damage. That means that any possible negligence could be overwhelmed with a disclosure like this. I might mishandle my surgical instruments or decide to do something that I didn't tell you about, and I might injure you. Do you still want me to do the surgery? If yes, now that you know these bad things could happen, you have the recourse against me. That can't be right. That cannot be the law of the Commonwealth. It shouldn't be. That's what right exists to prevent. Fiorucci's reply also talks about lie against reference, which was superseded by statute, specifically Virginia Code 8.01.521.20, which changed the statewide, which instituted the statewide standard of care. He says it stands for the proposition that the standard of care, that failure to have informed consent violates the standard of care and is negligent. Except that's not the issue in this case. The issue is misdiagnosis and bad practice during a surgery. You can test that very simply. If misdiagnosis was the only failure in the standard of care and there had been a proper procedure, the only dispute would have been about damages. There's no dispute that Mr. Chin allowed the procedure. The door never came open, not in voir dire, not in testimony. It stayed, again, firmly shut. I also want to point out a few things that did come out of the writ panel because they've remained an issue in the case. There's no contemporaneous objection. During voir dire, the objection occurs after the morning break, Appendix 186. When Dr. Smigalski is testifying, there are objections. But the main objection occurs the next day at the opening, Appendix 711, 713, and Appendix 717 to 730. Dr. Smigalski was gone. And that makes this case Vitar against Brahman, 272 Virginia 130. There's no way for the court to fix anything. The witness is gone. So where's the contemporaneous objection? In the reply brief, Fiorucci says, we didn't argue that the lack of an objection precluded Fiorucci from seeking to respond to Dr. Spogalski's testimony. Okay. It just places these issues beyond the reach of this court under Rule 5:25. There's nothing for you to do. There's no contemporaneous objection to create the preservation of error. Dr. Fiorucci wants you to hold the knowledge of potential risk is the same thing as consent to injury. It isn't, and you shouldn't. Right is right. Evidence of information conveyed to Wright concerning the risks of surgery in obtaining consent is neither relevant nor material to the standard of care. It can't be. Preoperative discussion of risk is not probative upon the issue of causation. Dr. Fiorucci never told you how the consent was relevant to the standard of care. That question came out again today. He never told you how a preoperative discussion of risk excuses causation. He can't. He also didn't tell you, if our postulate of the standard of review is abuse of discretion, which of the three factors in the Chippenham case the court got wrong. He never mentioned it, never spoke to it, not a word. Finally, although I normally wouldn't speak to an amicus brief, I do need to point out what I believe are inaccuracies in the VADA brief. On page 6, the VADA wrote to you and said, Chin testified that Dr. Fiorucci told him that the extractions were medically necessary and that he was given no option but to have the procedure. They don't cite anything in support of that statement. On Appendix 496, the question is, when you left Dr. Fiorucci's office that day, no one had told you that the surgery was medically necessary. Is that correct? Answer, no, not in those words. Further, on page 6 and 7 of the VADA brief, they state Dr. Gary Smogalski, DDS, one of Chin's standard of care experts, admitted that he had caused the very injury at issue to one of his own patients, but he contended it was not negligent because he had discussed the possible numbness with his patient and the patient went into it knowing the outcome. He didn't say that at all. He did not say he caused the very injury at issue. He described how Chin and his patient were completely different, Appendix 684 and 712. I would ask that you simply lay aside the DADA brief because it's inaccurate.
Counsel, I have one question for you, if I could.
Yes, Your Honor.
If a doctor is giving the patient information about his options, and if one of those options is that there be no surgical treatment, does that in and of itself negate a claim of negligence on the part of the doctor that regarding his options of treatment? In other words, let's say he was negligent in giving an option, you can have this treatment. But if he says you can have it or not do anything at all, does that negate his misadvice?
No, it can't. Let's assume that my earlier botched, he got the diagnosis wrong and there had been a proper procedure. It's almost the same thing. A bad diagnosis, no, I don't want you to do anything. We're talking about the damages as a result of the misdiagnosis. That's not consent. That's not allowing mistreatment. That's accepting what an expert physician tells you and choosing, I don't want to do it. I can't afford it. I don't like the risk. I'll live with it. Could have been a variety of reasons. None of that came out. But the point is, misdiagnosis is one claim. Mistreatment's a different one.
I understand.
The middle, do you want to have this treatment? Doesn't change much. It doesn't open a door. It would be odd to allow that. The only thing that will change is what's the harm to Mr. Chin if he didn't have the procedure based on a bad diagnosis. Let's suppose there was a bad diagnosis, and in fact the correct diagnosis, the answer would have been live with it. There would have been no harm, because the misdiagnosis wouldn't have changed anything.
Okay.
With that, I'll conclude my remarks. Thank you very much. I appreciate your courtesy to me, to Ms. Kane, and to Mr. Chin. I submit his clause for your delivery.
Thank you. You have just a few seconds for rebuttal.
Very brief. I'm not sure why some of the court's questions during my presentation seemed hostile to the notion that Mr. Chin opened the door, particularly when, with his testimony, particularly when there's absolutely no response from Mr. Chin in his briefs regarding my contention that Mr. Chin's discussions of the preoperative conversations he had with Dr. Fiorucci opened the door. There's no response to that at all. There was no response to that during Mr. Summers' argument as well. I see my time is concluded.
All right, thank you. The next case, please.